This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
If Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today in the podcast, we're going to evaluate Florida State's performance really through the first two games based on what we've seen on film, what we've seen, you know, after studying a little bit more, to basically assess whether or not the perception is reality in what we've seen from Florida State so far. So without further ado, let's begin. First of all, I've spent a good bit of time going back through the Florida State versus Oklahoma State game and the Citadel game as well, as these first two games, going back through the film more closely just to see whether or not the perception is reality, whether or not, you know, if you're listening to the national analysts and so on, a lot of people have been talking about how Florida State has just not looked as impressive at this point as they did last year. And I've really wanted to see, okay, where have we seen weakness? Where, you know, are we seeing a team that's simply not as strong as last year, or, you know, are there other factors in play here? And in all honesty, as I watched these, I came away thinking, you know, after the Oklahoma State game, okay, well, you know, you've got your first game problems, but by and large, this was very, very close to being a rout right from the start. I mean, essentially, Winston's second quarter red zone interception is the only thing that stood between a 24-0 start, and you start 24-0 and that game's over. And instead, you know, you get to 17-0, and basically this is a game that you don't put away, you don't show the killer instinct necessarily that we saw from Florida State late last year, and through the middle of the season last year. But, you know, again, looking at that game, I didn't see quite the same level of concern that I expected to when I actually went back and looked at it more closely. The same thing happened with the Citadel. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But one thing I want to address right up front is when we're looking at this year's team versus last year's team, it's really hard. It's really difficult to eliminate the hindsight bias that you have when evaluating last year's team. The hard part is to put ourselves where we were watching this team last year through two games, and whether or not this team had, you know, what concerns had we seen through two games last year? What have we seen regarding this team now? And can we compare those without the benefit of hindsight, saying that last year's team eventually developed into, you know, a cold-blooded killer that just annihilated teams from the Maryland game through the rest of the year. And that's really hard to do. But when I go back and I look at last year's team, you know, the first drive of the game, first quarter, they gave up a touchdown to Pitt. Pitt drove straight down the field and scored. That game was 14-10. After a Pitt field goal, you know, about midway through the second quarter, that game was 28-10 at the half, and 31-13, you know, midway through the third quarter, that game was still not completely put away at that point. And then Florida State scored in the fourth to make it 41-13. That gets you your final margin. But there were some definite concerns coming out of that game, particularly in the run game. Where, you know, Pittsburgh had some success in the run game over the course of that game. They only had 96 yards total, but they did have some success at different points, in particular early on in that game. And then Florida State kind of locked some things down a little bit. But overall, that also is not as good of a Pittsburgh team as this Oklahoma State team was that Florida State played in game one. So, and that actually surprised me a little bit, because I knew that Oklahoma State was very young going into that game, and I didn't really expect them, I wasn't quite sure that they would show the level of athleticism that they did, particularly in the secondary, where they were young, but boy, those guys could really run. I mean, you can definitely see that, you know, that with the players that they have to defend the spread kinds of offenses that they're facing in the Big 12, they really are. I mean, they were a much smaller team than Florida State's used to playing, at least on defense, and they're very much equipped to cover and run downfield. I mean, that's what they're designed to do, and you could see that in their secondary, and they did a good job overall covering Florida State in the secondary. And when they got beat, they were smart enough and well coached enough to do what every team should do in college when you're beat deep, and that's interfere and hold. And you had a number of those where, you know, the guy recognized he was beat and he immediately held, he immediately interfered, and you only give up 10 yards, 15 yards, depending on the play. And yeah, those ended up being big, but that keeps Florida State from blowing the game open so easily with some deep plays that they could have had otherwise. So, you know, that's the first thing. And then the second thing is that, you know, we were told before the game that the Florida State offensive line against Oklahoma State had come into this game having had pretty much the entire line had a stomach flu. They played this game sick. We weren't sure what to think about that initially, but boy, they were sluggish on tape, and you could see that in Florida State, you know, struggling to 3.4 yards per carry on the night, which is not very good for a running game that a lot of people, including myself, expected to be pretty close to pretty dominant this year. But you know, when I went back and watched the tape, I saw guys making mistakes. I saw Josue Matias just whiffing a couple times on inside zone plays and on one pass protection, just Ole type blocks, and it's not stuff you've seen from him over the last couple of years. I saw Trey Jackson miss some blocks that were just completely not characteristic of what I've seen from him in the past. I saw Cam Irving whiff on two or three different blocks, and a number of these were places where, you know, basically Carlos Williams was doing well. He was running well just to get back to the line of scrimmage. Do I expect that to continue over the course of this year? Of course not. I do think that it does appear that the fluid had some impact in terms of, you know, they just looked sluggish. They struggled to move well and to move in unison. But, you know, reports out of camp had been that they'd really been gashing the Florida State front, which, you know, on the plus side, the Florida State defensive front has looked better through two games than I expected it to. So, but getting back to the offensive line, basically, these guys, I do think there's some growing pains with a different center and there've been a couple communication issues on some combo blocks here and there. But by and large, actually, I think Austin Barron has looked much better on my second review, on my tape reviews, than I expected. You know, he's actually missed fewer blocks, I think, than Matias, and Jackson has been around the same in terms of grade level, from what I've seen on tape. But basically, you know, that's the one place where there's been, aside from punting, which we can just sort of bracket, that's been a problem for 2 years. But aside from punting, that's the one place where there's been any sort of real point where you could have some concern, is the way that the offensive line looked against Oklahoma State. And Oklahoma State happens to be the one place where they had some experience coming into the game. And the one thing that we talked about before the game is that they had an experienced and very good defensive line. There's one place where they had a lot of experience coming back into this game, and I think that showed. It was the one place where they were able to really compete, and that helped keep the game a little bit closer over the course of that game. And like I said, they were a better team overall than what Florida State played in Pitt the year before in the opener. At the same time, if you look at how Florida State opened that game, they were a Jameis Winston red zone interception away from 24-0. And you open a game 24-0, that game's over. And instead, you throw the interception, you give them some life. They're able to punt the ball away again. You go down again, and you're able to, you extend to 17-0, and you know that's a good start still. But they've still got a little life, and then they scored, and they were able to sort of claw back and get to where they could believe, and ultimately, you know, you get to the place where you go up again, go up 38 to, 38 to 24 or 38 to 24, I think it was, where, you know, before the last score that Oklahoma State had late, which was really a garbage score that, you know, doesn't matter all that much. That game was already put away. When you look at that was very close to the kind of dominance that we saw from Florida State last year. It's certainly not the level of dominance. You know, Florida State didn't show that level of dominance in the first game against Pittsburgh last year, and that was not as good of a Pitt team. So, you know, I see that, and on defense, you know, when I went broke it down, I felt like actually I saw more, I saw better performance by and large from the defensive tackles, in particular Niall Lawrence Stample, who did have a couple bad plays, but played solidly, and also Derek Mitchell has played extremely well through two games. The defensive tackles have been better than expected. They're not Jernigan, but overall they've been stronger than I expected at this point. Terrence Smith has played terrific football through these games. The secondary is just as good as people expected. You did see Williams was fighting through, was very clearly not healthy against Oklahoma State, but you know, fought through. Darby was not quite limited as Williams, but you know, there's good reason that they did not play against the Citadel. Those guys needed to be held out because it was pretty clear that they were not fully healthy. They could not turn and run as well as they wanted. And getting the chance to take the time off against the Citadel was critical. But then what do you see against the Citadel? You see some of the backups, Nick Wasim, who's not all that physical, coming up and missing some tackles on the edge. Marquez White also having some difficulty, coming up and making some tackles on the edge, which allowed the Citadel to keep some drives going and so on. Again, these are all things that are related, but they're really not signs of where this Florida State team is in that sense. They're places where, you know, they keep scores from quite inflating like they did last year, you know, when Florida State started running through teams, just dismantling teams, you know, from Maryland and Clemson and NC State and just blowing these teams out from October on. But if we look at the beginning of last year, if we go back, not only was that Pittsburgh game a game longer than a lot of people remember and showed some concerns, there were a lot of concerns about whether Florida State could hold the edge. If you remember right, on defense, Nevada did the same thing. They went down and they scored early on against Florida State. You know, that game was 7-3 Nevada midway through the second quarter, and people don't seem to remember that. It wasn't until 3 minutes left in the second quarter that Florida State went up 10-7 in that game. So you know, it was 17-7. Florida State scored with a minute to go in the second quarter to go up 17-7 against Nevada. And I remember the chats that we had on Noel Digest. We had fans just, you know, panicking because Florida State did not look good. And then all of a sudden Florida State ran off, you know, score after score after score in the third and fourth quarter of that game to, you know, wind up 62-7. But, you know, that game was 10-7 with 3 minutes left in the second quarter. Actually, it was 10-7 with 40 seconds left in the second quarter before Rashad Greene scored. So it was 10-7 in the last minute of the second quarter against Nevada. Now, Nevada is better than the Citadel, no question. But, you know, that was another game where Nevada was able to slow the game down, especially early on, was able to limit some things. You know, Winston made a couple mistakes. There were a lot of concerns coming out of that game. Then against Bethune-Cookman, game three last year, same kinds of problems. Yes, Florida State rolled, but Bethune-Cookman was able to run the football. Bethune-Cookman, you know, they had 182 yards rushing last year. Well, you know, that's not a whole lot different from what you had this year. You know, Bethune-Cookman had 183 yards rushing, and I'm looking at it right now. The Citadel had The Citadel had 250 yards rushing. The yards per rush were not all that different between the Citadel and Bethune-Cookman. And the difference is Bethune-Cookman was not running the triple option, which the Citadel was. And the other thing is that when I actually went back and I watched the Citadel tape again, and I watched more carefully, one of the things that stuck out to me is Florida State did zero preparation for that game. They stayed in the same defense the entire game. And you can talk about, oh, well, that, you know, they just missed Jeremy Pruitt making the halftime adjustments. Not at all. has nothing to do with it. You're talking about a team that came in and knew that they would put away the Citadel without any real problem. They knew that they needed to, you know, get the principles of stopping the option down in case they play a Georgia Tech or somebody later in the year. But basically, they came out and they played the same defense the entire game. And they basically just said, are you going to be fundamental enough? Are you going to be assignment sound enough to actually do what you're supposed to do here? And as it turned out, you know, you had some issues with some cut blocking and some chop blocking and some problems that that got some defensive linemen hurt early on, but that only exacerbated things by going to younger players earlier. But basically, then Florida State went to all these young guys, ran the same defense the entire game, and said, you know, you guys just need to do this, and that's it. So what? Essentially, it was just don't get hurt, show that your assignment's sound, and let's get done with this game. And that's what they did. They were able to go in, they limited things enough, and, you know, that game, unlike last year, one of the things that's striking about this, last year, a minute to go in the second quarter against Nevada, Florida State's up 10-7. At the end of the second quarter against the Citadel, it's 28-0. Florida State starts out behind against Pittsburgh. Florida State goes up 17-0 against Oklahoma State. So they've actually started better. They've been more consistently good early on against these teams. And yes, Oklahoma State's better than Pittsburgh was last year, and Nevada is better than the Citadel by a lot. But overall, you know, Florida State's offense scored on its only six drives. Six straight drives to open the game, they scored, and then they were done. That's efficiency. Now, they did have two field goals, one because of a drop in the end zone where Winston actually should have gone to the flat. Dropped by Christian Green, Winston should have gone to the flat. And, you know, you got the running back walking in. You got Carlos Williams walking in. And then the second one, you have another drop in the end zone. And you know, you end up with two field goals instead of touchdowns. But basically, you're sitting in a position where you score on your first six drives. The Citadel's able to limit the game to nine drives. It's a very quick game. And they call timeout to score with 12 seconds left. And so it ends up 37-12 instead of, you know, 37-6. And, you know, you have your couple field goals. You got a couple, you know, things to clean up on the second team. You know, these are not things to be concerned about. And what I think has happened as I've watched these tapes, what's happened is that the national media, they pay attention to scores. And you look at Oklahoma State, and that game really was close to getting out of hand. Very close. And Florida State dominated that game. And then Oklahoma State was able to fight back and claw back to get, you know, just close enough to, you know, to make it interesting. But that game was never in doubt. That game was never in doubt. Florida State, you know, the closest things got after Oklahoma State came back was 20-17. Then FSU goes up 27-17, then 27-24, and then FSU answers with 30-24, 37-24, and the game's over. Game was never in doubt. FSU answered every time Oklahoma State put any pressure on. But again, the concern is, well, they weren't as dominant as last year. Well, they're just as dominant as they were through three, four games last year, especially when we go to game four and we look at Boston College, who ran all over Florida State in game four last year. And so when we start to look at some of this stuff, you know, so far we've not seen anybody give Florida State the problems that Boston College did last year. And of course, that seems to have been validated a little bit by welcome to ACC problems, Southern Cal. Boston College did to Southern Cal what they did to Florida State last year, only Southern Cal couldn't find a way to respond. So when I've looked at this, as I've seen it, yes, there have been some inconsistencies. You know, you've seen some inexperience from Carlos Williams in missing a couple cutback lanes, you know, particularly against Oklahoma State. I thought he ran better in that regard against the Citadel. The offensive line having some communication issues and being sluggish against Oklahoma State, and then, you know, by and large, not missing a whole lot against the Citadel. And yes, you know, difference in competition level is significant, but a lot of it just boils down to execution, and execution is execution regardless of who you're going against. So when I've actually looked at this, I feel like, you know, I don't think a lot of people are really taking that close a look at what's actually happening on these plays. Another thing, another place where people are pointing to this and saying, well, Florida State needs a number two receiver. I mean, they just kept going to Rashad Greene. And actually, I felt when I watched the game to begin with that Winston forced a lot of throws, forced too many throws to Rashad Greene. I thought that on first watch. When I went back and I watched, they were running the levels concept. They were running X cross over and over and over again, where Winston is told bang the cross. Every time that X comes open, every time Green is open on that cross, you hit him every time. That's the first thing you're going to look at, and you're going to hit that every time. If he's got any space, you hit him. And the design is to give the ball to a playmaker in space. This is, by the way, Peyton Manning's most commonly run, his favorite play as well. He ran it to Marvin Harrison for years, and then to Reggie Wayne for years. You know, just keep feeding that guy, and then once they start to close that down, then you go to the next level, which is O'Leary, and then if they try to close that down, then you go straight over the top to a post route or something along that line over the top. Well, that's what they did. And they ran that to death. But, you know, Oklahoma State was playing over the top, and they were willing to give that in route every time. They were willing to give that, and Florida State was willing to take it. Now, does Florida State need to have a second and third option like they did last year? Absolutely. I think that needs to, you know, there's no question that they needed. Last year's offense was so difficult to defend because you had not just Rashad Greene, but you had Benjamin, and you had O'Leary, and you had Kenny Shaw on the field all at once, and you can't defend all of them all at once. And Benjamin, you know, giving that special mismatch on the one side, you know, that's that much more of a problem. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, what I saw, what I've expected is really Bobo Wilson to be the number two guy. I've said that since the preseason. I expect Bobo Wilson to be the number two guy. I expect him to be the one to step in to be a bit of a mismatch. It's a different kind of mismatch because he's much more of a you know, he's a smaller guy. He's much more of a smooth speed guy who's explosive than what you got with Benjamin, who's, you know, got the ridiculous catch radius and is just a giant. But, you know, I think, again, there's no reason. When I watched the Citadel game, I saw nothing to indicate anything other than that Bobo Wilson will have no problem stepping into being the number two receiver. And if he's able to do that, I think the rest of it, you know, the rest of the unit is good enough to basically make up for, you know, the loss of anything else. So I don't see a whole lot other than the punting situation, which, you know, Florida State seems to be ready to try rugby style punting, which is about time in terms of the way that this has worked. But basically, you know, I haven't seen a whole lot of reason to be concerned when I've actually watched the tape. The scores have not looked super impressive, but the Citadel game was nine total possessions. You're not, you know, when you average, last year the average was a little over 12, almost 12 and a half possessions a game. Well, that's 21, 28 points that you can't even put on the board because they're not even available. The question is always about efficiency, and they were plenty efficient. They got off the field. They were fine. Now, there are other concerns, as we've seen this week with Winston continuing to show poor judgment off the field. I think that, you know, there's still, you know, one of the things that last year they took until about the fifth game to gel defensively. And, you know, this year, if they don't gel defensively by game three, then there's going to be problems because, you know, Clemson, I think, is, as we'll talk about in the next podcast, Clemson is better than they were last year. But overall, I think this team is actually, through two games, a little bit ahead of where last year's team is. And I know that's counter to what a lot of people have said, but as I've watched more closely, as I've gone back and I've looked at not just the results, but the causes of what's actually happening, this team is really close. I think it's one of those things where I think it's actually in better shape through two games than last year's team. Are they going to get to where they become the stone cold killers that last year's team wound up being? I don't know. Last year's team developed quite a bit between games two and game five, without question. I mean, that and they learned to put teams away. And this team still has not quite shown that they are where last year's team finished in being able to put teams away. But that's really all that's been missing, is just being able to put teams away. And there's a big difference between that, between struggling to put teams away and not finishing teams and actually having real problems. Now, if you play with your food long enough, it may get away. But ultimately, what I think we're looking at here is not so much of a team that has a long way to go to be anywhere close to as good as last year. I think it's a team that just hasn't quite gotten to where last year's team was by the middle of the year in terms of being able to close teams out. And that's just, one more little piece of execution away. That's one more detail of making sure that, you don't give up a first down away. That's one more not turning the ball over in the red zone away. That's where this team is basically right on the cusp of being there. Now, in this next podcast, which we'll talk about how Florida State matches up with Clemson, I think it may well be that people are, again, talking after this game about how this team is not as good as they were last year, because I don't think there's any way that they blow out Clemson the way that they did last year, in part because Clemson's better and in part because last year, it was a perfect storm in terms of early turnovers, and, they were able to put Clemson out early because of some turnovers and the way that game just flowed, and I don't expect that to happen this year. But they still may be a better team at the end of the day. So we'll talk a little bit more about what I've seen from Clemson. I've gone through the Clemson-Georgia game specifically in some detail. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the next podcast. But basically, through two games, I think this is a situation where the expectations are beyond what basically could have been achieved given what we've seen so far. I think the expectations are what have led people to feel like this team doesn't look like it's a championship caliber team. I think it's looked like a championship caliber team, but it's a championship caliber team that's still figuring out a little bit of who it is. Whereas last year's team, by the end of the year, of course, it has an identity. It clearly, the leadership is established and all of that stuff. So, going into the Clemson game, do I have the feeling that I did last year where Florida State's ready to blow that team out? Well, this is game three. I think it's harder to project things to begin with. And even if it wasn't game three, I think that Clemson's good enough that's not going to be that's not as much in the cards. But we'll talk more about that in the next podcast. Bottom line for this podcast, the bottom line conclusion is that I think this team is a lot closer to being dominant, to being the kind of team that we saw last year, than people appreciate, than people realize. And I actually, like I said, I think this team is actually ahead of where last year's team was through two games. And that may surprise you, but again, the film don't lie. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and wrap it for this particular podcast. On behalf of the rest of the Noll Digest crew, I'm Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.